Okay, well, this morning we continue our study of the Westminster Larger Catechism on the Law, and we'll be moving from the seventh commandment to the eighth commandment, which is, thou shalt not steal. And so as we look at this, what we are going to see is that this law is concerned with our respect for the sanctity of property. So as we think back over the last couple of commandments that we've looked at, the sixth commandment is dealing with the respect for the sanctity of life. The seventh commandment is dealing with the respect for the sanctity of sex. And now we move to a respect for the sanctity of property. And we will be looking at our duties under this law, our positive duties. But before we get into that, I want us to consider a foundational principle upon which I believe all of these duties are built. And so we need to understand it first before we jump into it. And that principle is that property or wealth is created by God and entrusted to man as a steward for the purpose of glorifying and serving God. For those who can't read it, because I was told this is really light chalk, property or wealth is created by God and entrusted to man as a steward for the purpose of glorifying and serving God. So we see in this foundational principle, from whom all wealth comes, which is God, we see that it is entrusted to man, not to be used for whatever he desires, but it's entrusted to him as a steward, and it's entrusted to him as a steward for a specific purpose, which is to glorify God and to serve him with that. So the reason I want us to keep an eye on this, and I want this on the board, is that as we go through these duties, very likely what's going to happen, just like in previous laws that we have looked at, you're going to have those what-if questions, right? When we start thinking of the specific application of these duties, you may say, well, what about this scenario, or what about that scenario? And I think in most of those instances, if we go back to this foundational principle upon which these duties are built, it will help crystallize in our mind the answer to that question. It may not completely, it may not in every circumstance, but I think if we keep an eye to this, it will kind of help us think through those questions as they come up. So if you have your catechism, I would like to look at it. We are in question 141, which asks, what are the duties required in the Eighth Commandment? Answer, the duties required in the Eighth Commandment are truth, faithfulness, and justice in contracts and commerce between man and man, rendering to everyone his due, restitution of goods unlawfully detained from the right owners thereof, giving and lending freely, according to our abilities and the necessities of others, moderation of our judgments, wills, and affections concerning worldly goods, a provident care and study to get, keep, use, and dispose these things which are necessary and convenient for the sustenance of our nature and suitable to our condition, a lawful calling and diligence in it, frugality, avoiding unnecessary lawsuits, insuretiship, or other like engagements, and an endeavor by all just and lawful means to procure, preserve, and further the wealth and outward estate of others as well as our own. So as we look at this answer and this list of duties, I think what we'll see is the final clause in this answer, this list of duties, is in some form a summary statement of all the rest, so that we could take the final clause, which is to endeavor by all just and lawful means to procure, preserve, and further the wealth and outward estate of others and ourselves. We can take that as a heading, and all of the other duties that came before it can be put under that as a means to that end. So in that statement, we see that we are to do three things. We are to procure wealth, we are to preserve wealth, and we are to further the wealth and outward estate. So three general duties. And we see that we are to do this for the good of two parties. The first, I think, is what we would expect under this commandment, to not steal. When we think of stealing, we think of taking something from another person. So it would make sense that we are to procure, preserve, and further the wealth and outward estate of someone else. So that's the first party. But the second party may not immediately come to mind under this commandment, and that is that we are called to and have a duty to procure, preserve, and further the wealth and outward estate of ourselves as well. And so we're going to take these duties over the next 2 weeks, and we're going to break them apart under those two people. So we're going to this week look at and consider how we are to procure, preserve, and further our own wealth and outward estate. And then next week we will look at those duties that are required of us to procure, preserve, and further the wealth and outward estate of someone else. And so under this heading of how man promotes his own wealth, we see that we are given four duties. And the first two are really focused on our first action of procuring for ourselves wealth and a good outward estate. And then the second two duties really focus on the next two actions, which is to preserve and further that wealth. So the first two duties which we are called to is the pursuit of a lawful calling or employment and diligent work in that calling. So we see the connection of these two. They're linked, and so we'll discuss them as one. So we are called to a pursuit of a lawful calling or employment and diligence in that calling. We see as we go through Scripture from the very beginning that man was created to work. Right? There's a false understanding of this sometimes, that work is a result of the fall. But if we go all the way back to the very beginning in the creation account, what we see is that from the very beginning, after creating Adam and Eve, that God set Adam about a job. He was to tend the garden. He was to name the animals. He was to work. He was to labor. He was created for this purpose, that he might glorify God in his work. But we see also after the fall that man is to continue to work. But it does look a little bit different, doesn't it? God then tells Adam that by the sweat of your brow will you labor. It doesn't mean that now work is a bad thing, that it's a negative thing. It is still a good thing. That's what man was created to do. But now it comes with a little more pain. It's a little more difficult. It's more challenging. And it's not strictly pure joy in carrying out that work. And so as I considered this idea of pursuing a lawful calling, I started thinking about our church specifically. And started thinking about the stage of life that many of our families are entering into. And it's a different stage. It's something new for our church. From, I guess, been a part of Monroe since almost the beginning, so almost 8 years, 9 years. And so I've seen many of the children in the church go from small children to now they are young adults, and they are in the final years of high school. They may be going off to college now. And so this idea of pursuing a lawful calling or employment is very real to them, right? This is on the front of their mind of, what am I called to do? What am I going to spend the rest of my life doing as an adult? And so not only are they thinking about it, but we as parents are thinking about that as well. What is our child called to do? And so I wanted us to consider how we as parents can help guide them in this. How can we help them to think rightly, think biblically about pursuing a lawful calling? And how, for you young adults who are entering into this stage, how can you begin to frame this in your mind and have a right understanding of how to process this? And as I was thinking about this, I came across a quote by a 17th century Puritan named Thomas Ridgely. Don't know much about him, honestly, but he actually wrote extensively on the law. And he wrote extensively on the Catechism, Westminster Confession. And so, in thinking of this idea of man's lawful pursuit of a calling, he wrote this He said, "We are wisely to make choice of such a calling in which we may glorify God and expect His blessing in order to the promoting our wealth and outward estate. Therefore, that business is to be chosen which we are most capable of managing and has in itself the fewest temptations attending it, especially such wherein the conscience is not burdened by unlawful oaths or prostituting solemn ordinances not designed by Christ as a qualification for them. Moreover, we are not to choose those callings wherein the gain is obtained by oppression or extortion, and which cannot be managed without danger of sinning, which will bring the blast of providence on all our undertakings. Therefore, we are earnestly to desire God's direction in this weighty concern, as well as depend on Him for success therein." This evaluation of how man is to approach a lawful calling is very different. It's in stark contrast to the modern humanist advice given to our children as they consider what they are to do as a lawful calling. Tell me if you've heard any of these before. You can be whatever you want to be. Anybody ever been told that? Anybody ever heard that? Right? Or another one is simply follow your passions. What are you passionate about? Pursue that. This is modern humanist view of vocation. And if you notice, who is at the center of both of these statements? You can be whatever you want to be. Self. Pursue your passions. Self. Where in that is God mentioned? As a Christian, this should raise a red flag for us, because what is the chief in demand? To glorify God and enjoy Him forever. That's our central focus, is God and His glory. And so as we consider this idea of what is our vocation, what is our lawful calling going to be, that should be central. Is God glorified in this? You will spend more time doing this probably than anything else in your adult life. You are going to give the majority of your time to it. So we ought to give consideration to God. And I think as we look back over the last several generations, as this mentality has been increasingly prevalent, we see the degradation of work. So if we go back to, say, my grandparents' generation, what we often refer to as the greatest generation, we see a people who worked very hard. But they also reaped great gain in that, in a way that no one before them had in this country. And so after working hard and diligently for some time, they eventually retired. This was a new concept. People didn't retire prior to this. People had not acquired enough wealth, for the most part, to be able to do this. But they worked diligently, they worked hard for many years, and then eventually retired. Rested, enjoyed the fruits of that labor. The next generation came along, my parents' generation, and they began to take that a step further. Okay, so we're going to work hard, we're going to work diligently, but let's compress this. Let's shoot for an early retirement, right? And so what did we sacrifice by means of doing this? You begin to see the mother leave the home and leave her lawful calling, which God had called her to do what? Provide more income for the family to expedite this process of leading to early retirement. Then came my generation on the heels of that. And what did we begin to do? We began to see the prosperity reaped by our grandparents and our parents and the relaxation of retirement. And we said, let's not work hard and diligently and put that off to retirement. And so what did we do? We accrued debt. We wanted what our parents had after many, many years of working hard, and we wanted it now. And so we acquired more and more debt, which only enhanced the need for more and more income. And so even more mothers left the home in pursuit of this goal. And now we have what is known as the millennial generation. And what is the overwhelming mentality of the millennials? They have gone so far as to have the mentality of, I don't want a job. I'm going to do anything and everything I can to not have a job. Live off mom and dad, live off the government, whatever it may be, I don't want to work. And so we see this increasing degradation of the way in which we view work and this idea of a lawful calling. And so the question is, how do we, as parents, help guide our children in a right understanding of this concept of a lawful calling? And young adults, as you're beginning to consider this, what God may have for you in the years ahead, how should you process it? What should be your central focus? And I think by looking at two questions, we can begin this process of thinking biblically and thinking rightly about a lawful calling. The first is, instead of preaching to them or communicating to them that you can be whatever you want to be, we as godly parents should help them to identify the talents with which God has blessed them and provide ways to develop those gifts further. Okay? You can't be kids. You can't be whatever you want to be. That's the sad news. As a kid, I grew up in a family of college basketball coaches. I desperately wanted to be an NBA basketball player. But I'm 6 feet tall, so I'm too short. I'm too slow, and I can't jump high enough. It wasn't for lack of work. When I played basketball, I worked harder than anyone. I prided myself in that. But it didn't change the fact that God had not gifted me with the necessary skills to accomplish what I ultimately wanted to be. So we can't be whatever we want to be. So parents, help your children identify where God has gifted them and help them develop those gifts further. And then the second is that we should not tell our children unqualified to follow their passions. Instead, we should tell them, follow your passions and interests so long as they lead to a calling that meet the following requirements. And this will not be an exhaustive list. I'm sure you can come up with more, but this will get you started. So follow your passions and interests so long as they lead to a calling that meet the following requirements. First and foremost, does it glorify God? Again, what is our chief end? To glorify God and enjoy Him forever. Secondly, going back to our previous question, has God gifted you to do this work and do it well? If He has not, and you pursue it, you are setting yourself up for great disappointment and great frustration. And as parents, in love, we should help our children identify areas in which they are not gifted and point them to the areas in which God has gifted them. Great example of this in pop culture. How many of you have watched American Idol? Okay, if you haven't, how many of you know what American Idol is? Okay, so those of you who don't, American Idol was this wildly popular reality show in which musicians would come, they would try out, they'd have tryouts all around the country, try out to be on the show, and it was a weekly competition in which contestants are eliminated week after week, going all the way down to a single winner who gets a record deal to be a professional musician. Probably the most popular episodes of this show, though, were not the actual competition. They were actually the tryouts. The early episodes, they would go city after city. They'd go to Atlanta, Chicago, or New York, and thousands of people would come to try out for this show. You would have great talent on one hand, but then you would always have those people coming to try out who were horrible singers. I mean, hideous. Terrible, no talent whatsoever, tone deaf. And oftentimes they would come with parents in tow, encouraging them to go and try out for this competition. And what was sad about it is that these poor people would come in, audition on camera, and they would be terrible. But their parents have been telling you, follow your dreams, follow your dreams. Go be a professional singer if that's what you want to be. Yet they had no talent. And so what happened is they were devastated when they go to this tryout. And sadly, in this case, it wasn't only devastated because I didn't get on the show or because someone told me I wasn't good, but these poor people were on national television with millions of people watching, and they were utterly humiliated as a result. And what's interesting is there would be occasions in which that would happen. The judges would just tear them apart and tell them how terrible they were at singing. They would leave the room weeping. Mom and Dad would be out there, and they would say, oh, don't believe what they say. Continue pursuing your dream. Is this a loving thing for those parents to do? Of course not. This is not loving to do that. We're encouraging our children to pursue something that will lead to disappointment, to heartache, to frustration on the one side, and on the other side, you are leading them to ignore the gifts which God has given them, which if they were to pursue them, would make them most useful in the kingdom of God. So, it's great if you have a passion for it, but if God has not gifted you for it, then you should not pursue it. Thirdly, third requirement is, does this lawful calling promote your wealth and outward estate? Does it promote your wealth and outward estate? We've all heard the idea of the starving artist, right? The starving painter. This would be an example, to some extent, of something in which it could be something that glorifies God in their painting, in their art. They may be extremely gifted in it. Yet if there is no means of using that gift to promote your wealth, which again, within the context of this commandment and our duty, this is what we're trying to do, then we may need to reconsider it. Okay? So that you're not a burden to someone else, and so that you can be used in helping those who are less fortunate and in need. There may be ways of doing this. Obviously, this is not a catch-all. If you take that artist example, perhaps it's you get a job that pays while you do your art in hopes that eventually people buy it, right? There are always a way of doing that. But again, if our goal is to promote our wealth and outward estate, and this job or employment that may be God-honoring, that you may be gifted at, does not promote that end, then we need to be discerning and give consideration as to whether or not this is what God has indeed called us to do. Fourthly, does this lawful calling, would it be accompanied with an inordinate number of temptations? Whatever job you go into, whatever your lawful calling is, you will be faced with temptations. Whether you're an accountant, a school teacher, a businessman, if you're a pastor, doesn't matter what it is, there will be temptations. So it's not a matter of, is this calling going to have no temptation? But I think we can recognize that there are certain callings, there are certain employments that have an inordinate number of temptations. And in that case, we should be discerning as to whether or not we should pursue those things. Because though we are called to promote the wealth and our outward estate, we are not called to do that at the destruction of our inward estate. And this is very important. So we need to give pause and really consider the cost of potentially pursuing a calling that may be accompanied with an inordinate number of temptations.
Josh, mm-hmm. I'm assuming this is going to be a different case for every individual because people have different weaknesses. But can you give an example of that?
Sure. Matt, I think we've talked about this before. Being in the music industry. Right?
First thing I just told Mariah was, like, say you're a DJ or a party promoter who spends their nights until 4 a.m. putting on parties where people drink and dress provocatively. You put yourself in a place where people are there to sin. So no matter how good you are at your job, or I'm a Christian in a atheist world, I'm going to make a difference, you're still right there in the war every night.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Being even a traveling band, right? This is something which music can be glorifying to God. You can be incredibly gifted in that area. Yet, depending on the circumstance and what kind of music you're in and how you're traveling or whatever it may be, you may be faced with an inordinate number of temptations. So, does that answer the question?
Yes.
All right.
Child actor.
Do what?
Child actor.
Yeah, exactly. Fifth requirement, that you do not, that this lawful calling, within this calling, you do not obtain your gain by means of oppression of others or by means of dishonesty. I think that should be pretty straightforward. And then lastly, that this calling does not require, let me rephrase this, that the calling can be managed in such a way that does not lead you to sin. It can be managed without sinning. And there are numerous sins that could be prevalent here, but I think the most obvious one that we would be confronted with today is this lawful calling, or is this calling going to demand of you that you ignore or neglect the Sabbath? That's a pretty real one today. It's an increasing number. We see more and more companies, more and more jobs requiring you to work on the Sabbath, which would be a violation of one of the other commandments. So those are just six. Those are six requirements, a lens through which we should view potential lawful callings that we can help guide our children, hopefully, in their pursuit of these things.
I was wondering, on number three, when it talks about promoting your wealth and out to the state, does that include people called into ministry? They don't.
Yes.
Like missionaries and things like that. Who,
so well, what are we? Let's qualify that. When we're talking about promoting one's wealth, we're not necessarily talking about being wealthy, which is really a subjective thing, right? If you talk to one person versus another, our view of what a wealthy person looks like may be different. This is not what we're talking about. We're talking about providing for one's means, or the necessities of life. This is really what we're talking about. We're not talking about trying to become rich. Jeff is under no illusion that he is going to become rich being a pastor, right? So that's not what we're talking about. And in such cases, this raises another question of the church, right? In those situations of providing for those ministers, right? It's our duty to do that. The idea of not muzzling the ox while he's treading grain, that we are to make sure that their physical needs are taken care of. So I believe that even in those cases, they are still able to promote their wealth. Again, we're not talking about being wealthy, but providing for our needs.
You think about, when I read that, when I think about Paul, when he would travel around, even though he was a preacher, he worked at the temple.
Absolutely.
To support himself so that he wasn't, like you said, he wasn't a burden
right
on other people.
Right, exactly. Scott?
I was just going to mention that these callings may or may not happen early on. They don't necessarily happen at the senior year of high school. And Jeff would be an example of thinking of going into veterinary science and realizing later in life, myself realizing I'm better at higher level consulting than programming. So, you know, there are a number of life experiences
absolutely
that happen. But some people know, indeed.
Sure, absolutely.
Some do not.
Absolutely, and that was going to be the next point of this isn't only for the young. So it may be that a shift in calling, like Scott's talking about, or it may be that you find yourself after many years of laboring in some employment, that as you evaluate it in light of these things, that you say, wow, I'm actually violating my duties here. This employment is requiring things of me that are actually sinful. So it is just as incumbent upon that person, no matter how long they've been in that employment, to seek the face of God for wisdom and then pursue some other employment that does fall within these requirements.
And it may be that you have to work toward what that calling eventually is. I've known since mm-hmm. I was a little girl that I wanted to grow up and be a mom, and that was all I wanted to do. That or make a women's professional basketball team.
You're shorter than I am, so yeah, that didn't work.
But so when we got married, I wasn't a mom, obviously, and there was no reason for me to stay mm-hmm. home. So I worked for those 6 years so that we could make sure that our cars are paid off and that we were at a place that when we
right.
could have children, then I could
sure.
do
that. Sure. I think that goes back to what Scott was saying. We find ourselves in different stages of life. We find ourselves, even gifts that we may not have realized we had may show themselves later in life as well. So absolutely. And those things may change. So once we have determined this, once we have pursued, we have acquired this lawful employment, the second component of this we see is that we are to work diligently in it. So I have here that once we found our calling, we are to pursue it with all diligence, working to the glory of God. And in subordination to this end, we are to diligently labor to provide for ourselves and families, that we may be in a position to do good to others, and in this serve the interest of Christ in our day. The confession under the section dealing with diligence cites Ephesians 4:28. It says, "Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands, the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth." So we see this idea of laboring to what end? Again, what is our end or goal in this? To provide for ourselves as well as for those who are in need. And so we labor diligently in this. So we're to pursue a lawful calling, and we're to work in it diligently for the end of procuring wealth. Okay, procuring wealth. So the next two things that we are called to, duties we are called to, deal with the idea of preserving and furthering that wealth. And so the first under that category is the idea of governing our affections and desires for worldly things. Governing our affections and desires for worldly things. Again, remember, if we go back to this, that these worldly things, worldly possessions, are given to man for the purpose of glorifying God. Not so that we might glory in the thing itself. They are a means to an end. They are not the end itself. Okay? So we need to govern those affections for those things. And we live in an age, maybe unlike any other, where it is increasingly difficult to do this. We live in an age of consumerism, where we have marketing slogans thrown at us left and right, advertisements promoting every new product. We're in an age in which we can create something new in a matter of weeks. So as soon as you buy one thing, it's obsolete and there's something new and better that's out. And we're confronted with this day in and day out. In Proverbs 30, verses 8 and 9, Agur understood this challenge. He understood the danger of giving too much attention to the things of this world when he said, "Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food allotted to me, lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord?" So here we see great wisdom that he's asking that God not give him too little. Why? If he has too little and his stomach is grumbling because he has not eaten, his mind will be fixed on the thing which he lacks. If he's shivering in cold because he is not clothed and he does not have shelter, He knows that his mind may be more focused and intent on that than on the God who is the giver of all blessings. And on the other end of that spectrum, if he has too much, he may again forget from whom all of these things come and what their end goal is, which is to glorify God, and he may deny the Lord. And so it is incumbent upon us to govern these desires and these affections for the things of this world, because they are a means to an end. They are not the end of themselves. And then the last duty we see under this responsibility to preserve and further wealth for ourselves is the practice of frugality. The practice of frugality. And so when we speak of frugality, we talk about not exceeding the circumstances of our income. Not exceeding the circumstances of our income, meaning live within our means. God has given us an allotted amount of goods, and we should be content with those things. And if we do not do this, if we don't live within our means, it reveals a few things. I think it reveals a discontentment with what God has given us. Discontentment with what God has given us. It shows a disregard for the future needs of our family. Disregard for the future needs of our family. And within that, presumes upon God that he will provide above and beyond what he has allotted to us to cover the difference. Thirdly, we see that we are likely of no use or no value in helping others in need. If we are living outside our means so that we do not have enough to even pay for our own expenses, then there's not going to be anything left to be of use to others, which is what we will be focused on next week. And then fourthly, we increase the temptation to make our callings unlawful. Okay? If we feel the stress that we have put upon ourselves because we are not handling our finances in such a way so that we are living beyond our means, the financial stress is very real. We read about statistics about divorce and how many, what an inordinate number of these divorces, when they begin to talk to these couples about what led to this, finances is so often a central part of this. There's financial strain, the stress that's very real that pours over into every other aspect of life. And so the stress becomes an issue. And so if we are under the stress or weight because we are living outside of our means, it increases the temptation to make our lawful callings unlawful, whether it be by dishonest gain, whether it be by dishonoring the Sabbath because we say, man, I've got to make more. And there's not enough hours in the day. How am I going to get this? So we neglect the worship of God in the pursuit of more wealth, so that we can maintain this lifestyle. So that living outside of our means is one way of not being frugal. But what about for the person who has an abundance of wealth? They can buy anything that they want or need without it being a problem. They have an abundance of wealth. Should this person also practice frugality? Is there a way for this person to also practice frugality? And I would say the answer is yes. If we have the means for large expenses, yet spend excessively out of ostentation, this idea of keeping up with the Joneses, right? Or so that we have the appearance of wealth. If we do this while at the same time withholding our liberality from the poor, then we are not practicing frugality. Say that again. If we have the means for large expenses, yet spend excessively out of ostentation, while at the same time withholding our liberality from the poor, then we are not practicing frugality. A man, very, very successful businessman, who some of you may be familiar with, comes to mind when I think of this. His name was R.G. Letourneau. If you're not familiar with him, he was one of the wealthiest men in America during the 20th century. When you see this huge earth-moving equipment, his company manufactured about 80% of all earth-moving equipment in our country for a long period of time. The large offshore oil rigs that you see out in the Gulf and all around the world, they also make all of those. And so this man was incredibly wealthy, one of the richest men in the country. But this man was also a very devout and outspoken Christian. And what was unique about this man was that he had all of this wealth, and he took the principle of Scripture of tithing 10%, and he turned it on its head so that he kept 10% of what he made, and he gave 90% away. And even while doing this, he still was one of the richest men in the country. And so this is an example, perhaps an extreme example, but an example of a man who had enough to buy anything he wanted, yet he still practiced frugality. Yes, he was still worth hundreds of millions of dollars, yet he was practicing frugality. Why? Because he did not withhold from those in need simply out of ostentation. And so, as we acquire, if God so blesses you with an abundance of wealth, consider how you can practice frugality. Are you spending for the sake of spending? Or are you just as liberal in giving to others as you are in acquiring goods for yourself? And then the last thing I would say under this idea of frugality is that we should not give away our property to unfit objects. We should not give away our property to unfit objects. And I mentioned this one because it's fresh on my mind, having just come back from a business trip a few weeks ago from Las Vegas. Okay, so I was at a trade show in the Mandalay Bay Hotel and Casino, and if you've ever been out to Las Vegas and been in one of these places, you pretty much can't go anywhere without eventually walking through the casino. They put it right in the center of everything to make sure they funnel all traffic through there. And so over the span of this week, being at this trade show and constantly walking through this casino over and over again, I had the opportunity to watch hundreds, thousands of people gambling in this casino. And I took time on a few occasions to stop and just hang out around the table, various games, and watch, or kind of watch over the shoulder of someone sitting at the slot machine. And if you're standing outside of it, you're not actually engaged in it, you begin to see what's happening in a way that I think if you're engaged in the gambling itself, you don't see. You see this winning going on, but as you stand there long enough and watch, you see this up and down movement, right? You may win some, then you may lose. Then you may win, then you may lose. But you see this continual downward trend almost every single time. So that these people are giving away their money, just giving it away. And what are they giving it to? Something that is unfit, particularly for a believer. So in that situation, if we go back to what the purpose is of this wealth and the way it is to be used, that it's to be used in glorifying and serving God, I think we could very easily and clearly say this is not a good use of these finances. It does not promote this end. And that is just one example of probably many that we could come up with of unfit objects to which we should not give our wealth and property because it does not lead to the glorifying of God. So that is how we are to pursue and promote our own wealth and outward estate. And what we will look at next week is how we do the same to promote the wealth and outward estate of our neighbor.